from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Apple is in the hot seat this week on Capitol Hill. It is one of the country's biggest corporate taxpayers, everyone conceded. But it is also, congressional investigators said this week, one of the country's biggest offshore tax avoiders, dodging billions in taxes with fancy footwork abroad. It's not alone. Apple says everything it's done is legal. What's going on? This hour on Point, Apple, corporate taxes, and the offshore world of tax escapes. You can join us on air or online where this conversation never ends. What needs fixing here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Apple CEO Tim Cook, in the hot seat yesterday in front of the Senate's Permanent Committee Subcommittee on Investigations, had to assert that, yes, indeed, Apple's an American company.
I'm often asked if Apple still considers itself an American company. My answer has always been an emphatic yes. We are proud to be an American company and equally proud of our contributions to the U.S. economy.
Yes, indeed, and also working the global labyrinth of tax law. Senator John McCain, Republican of Arizona, asked Apple CEO Tim Cook if he thought Apple's tax practices were unfair. You'll hear McCain, then Cook.
Can you understand there's a perception of unfair advantage here?
Honestly speaking, I don't see it as being unfair. I am not an unfair person. That's not who we are as a company.
He's not an unfair person. That's not who they are as a company. But, man, they're getting drubbed in the headlines this week and maybe more. Joining us first today from Rome is Jesse Drucker, investigative reporter at large for Bloomberg News. He writes an ongoing series for Bloomberg entitled The Great Corporate Tax Dodge about offshore tax havens. Jesse Drucker, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
What's the, I don't know what you want to call it, loophole or you name it. What did Apple do here that got the attention of the congressional investigators, Jesse?
Well, basically, Apple does what a lot of big multinationals do around the country, which is it cuts billions of dollars from its taxes by moving profits generated from sales in real countries like the U.S. and the U.K. and France and Japan into subsidiaries and tax havens around the world. And the result is that the partial result that came out that was very interesting yesterday is that they were able to pay taxes at rates of sometimes as low as 2% on some of their income and subsidiaries around the world. I mean, the bottom line is that they were able to avoid income taxes, according to the Senate investigators, on something on the order of $74 billion worth of income over the last 4 years.
That's
the amount of income that they're avoiding tax on. That's not the amount of tax avoided.
Right.
That makes
right.
Sense.
People talking about maybe $9 billion, maybe more. This is just Apple. If you multiply it across lots of multinational players, it turns into real money. There was a big focus on the Ireland connection this week, Jesse, and this sort of mismatch between Irish law and American law that allowed Apple to come up with essentially stateless subsidiaries, more or less filing taxes nowhere. What was the gap there?
Well, so the issue, let's kind of go back to the beginning. The fundamental issue here is that companies allocate their taxable profits around the world not based on where they have actual people that work for them or sales or equipment or anything like that. They do it based on something called transfer pricing. And what transfer pricing means is that the companies enter into essentially fictional transactions with their subsidiaries for the purposes of figuring out how much profits they should record in a specific place. So in the case of Apple, what Apple does is Apple licenses intellectual property rights to a subsidiary in Ireland. But what happens after that is that, Ireland makes it very easy. For years, people have thought that the appeal of a place like Ireland, or of Ireland specifically, is it has a very low corporate tax rate of 12.5%. That is not the main appeal of Ireland for multinationals. The main appeal of Ireland for multinationals is that Ireland makes it very easy for you to get income into tax havens like Bermuda and the Cayman Islands. If you want to switch a little bit, we could talk a little about Google, which is actually does something very similar to what Apple does, but in probably an even kind of easier way to understand.
Okay.
What Google does is, a number of years ago in 2003, Google essentially sold all of the intellectual property rights to profits outside of the U.S. to a subsidiary in Ireland or an Irish subsidiary that claimed to be headquartered in Bermuda. And from that point forward, what that meant is that any profits attributable to those patent rights would be recorded not by Google in the U.S., or would have to pay taxes at a rate of 35%, but to this company that's headquartered in Bermuda, where there's no corporate income tax at all. And so this is essentially Google's mechanism for pushing profits offshore. The first step, right, is to move the rights to those profits to a subsidiary overseas.
Yep.
And then after that is to then actually move profits out of countries where sales take place into the company that is headquartered in Bermuda. And so this has created a lot of controversy right now in the UK. Google has been brought before the UK Parliament twice in the last 6 months to explain its low taxes in England, because what happens is in England, if you're a British customer of Google, if you're buying that from Google, Google takes the position that they don't have a UK subsidiary that's selling you that ad, because that means it could get taxable in the UK. Their position is that it's being sold to you by the Irish subsidiary.
Right.
And the Irish subsidiary is able to get its taxable profits down almost to zero by paying royalties up to its parent, which is headquartered in Bermuda. It's all kind of complicated and convoluted, but the bottom line is that Apple and Google and Cisco and Yahoo and a number of other big tech and pharma companies are able to move hundreds of billions of dollars a year of profits out of the countries where they actually do sales and do their business and into mailboxes in places like the Cayman Islands and Bermuda and Switzerland.
I mean, the global economy is one thing. We get that, but it relies on all kinds of infrastructure. And if you've got big corporations who can effectively disentangle themselves from every state, maybe they're paying nowhere. I mean, that was the allegation this week. We've got Michigan Democrat Senator Carl Levin here. This was on Monday, saying, look, Google or Apple at this point has got itself just sort of floating off in this stateless circumstance. Very nice for tax payment or non-payment.
Apple is not satisfied with shifting profits to a low tax offshore haven. Apple then sought successfully the holy grail of tax avoidance. It created offshore entities holding tens of billions of dollars while claiming that it was a tax resident nowhere.
A tax resident nowhere on billions and billions in revenue. Jesse Drucker, stand by in Rome. I want to get to Apple Country involved here as well. Kara Swisher joins us right now. Co-executive editor at All Things D, the tech website. Been covering Silicon Valley and tech companies like Apple for a long time. Joins us from San Francisco. Kara, welcome back to One Point. Thanks for being here.
No problem.
We heard Tim Cook and co. before Congress yesterday. But how does Apple look at this? I mean, they pay a lot in this country, one of the biggest corporate taxpayers in the United States. But the congressional investigators this week saying many billions more they're paying nowhere that ought to be paid here. And, you know, they're being portrayed as scofflaws here.
Yes, they are. Yeah, they did, except when they went soft on them in the hearings. I don't know if you put that part in there.
Yeah, the lovey-dovey. We'll listen to that as well. I mean, they're a great company, but what about it?
Well, you know, these are the tax laws that exist. These are the tax laws they're operating under. And so maybe the question should be, and I think Apple put a focus on this, why are the tax laws the way they are? And the problem isn't Apple or Cisco or Google. It's the way they create them, and they're just playing by the rules that are written by Congress and the politicians. And so that's a very appealing thing to a lot of Americans, a lot of people who have to deal with their ridiculous tax laws and are very complicated ones. So all these corporations have very expensive accountants to figure these things out. And you know, where's the problem? Is it a problem in the American tax law system, or is it a problem for following these rules that are so hard to follow? I think they were making that point yesterday.
I mean, Jesse, you followed this as an investigative reporter. Tim Cook, Apple CEO, said before Congress yesterday that Apple pays all the taxes we owe, he said, every single dollar. Does that appear true on the face of it, technically, Jesse?
Well, he's making an assertion. Well, the answer is no. I mean, he's making an assertion. He's making an assertion that is kind of right at the heart of this debate, which is where should this income be? I mean, again, this gets a little technical, but the Senate investigators' report raises questions about kind of precisely where some of Apple's income should be. I mean, you know, Tim Cook several times in the hearing asserted that Apple paid taxes on its U.S. profits last year at a rate of 30.5%, and this was presented as evidence of Apple's kind of high tax burden in the U.S., or at least respectable tax burden in the U.S. But the problem with that calculation is that he's making an assertion about what profits are actually belong in the U.S.,
right.
And the whole debate and the whole disputes that come up between big companies and the IRS and tax regulators around the world is precisely where should that income be? And if, in fact, Apple should have more income in the U.S., that would, in fact, mean that their tax rate in the U.S. is a lot lower than what he asserted.
And if they effectively, through accounting, end up assigning that revenue nowhere to no country, I mean, even The Economist magazine here, Kara, writing recently, saying civilization works only if those who enjoy its benefits are also prepared to pay their share of the costs. If you can, if you can account your way into zero accountability, who's paying the freight? It goes back on the little guy.
Well, I think that's the point of all these tax havens for not just Apple but individuals and everywhere else, is that the very rich with all of these accountants can't afford to figure out how to do this in a way that works, that is, you know, that sort of skirts the law, essentially. But it's not illegal, and I think it's not going to assert illegalness in front of Congress. But I think the issue is, what happens to these subsidiaries, to all these companies in this world, this global world where they're making profits all over the world, and where should these taxes be put? And then the problem is that most of Apple's earnings happen all over the place. And I think it's more and more, I believe, international is probably bigger at this point for Apple.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about congressional charges this week of a giant tax dodge by Apple abroad, looking at American corporate tax policy and the world of offshore tax escapes. Jesse Drucker is with us, investigative reporter-at-large for Bloomberg News, joining us today from Rome in Italy. Europe has been really up in arms about this as austerity has kicked in and everybody's looking at, well, who's paying and who's not. Kara Swisher joins us from San Francisco, California, out closer to Cupertino and Apple country, co-executive editor at the All Things D tech website. They've been wailing pretty hard on Apple this week, but there was a lot of love from some quarters as well yesterday. Here was Kentucky Senator Republican Rand Paul defending Apple, attacking the committee he was sitting on.
I'm also offended by a government that convenes a hearing to bully one of America's greatest success stories. I'm offended by the spectacle of dragging in executives from an American company that is not doing anything illegal. If anyone should be on trial here, it should be Congress. I frankly think the committee should apologize to Apple.
The committee should apologize. Lay off Apple. But John McCain was kind of having it both ways. Here he is, saying they pay a lot, but there is avoidance here. Here's McCain.
Apple executives like to boast that their company is the highest corporate taxpayer in the U.S. But what they often leave out is the second part of the story, and that is that Apple is one of the largest corporate tax avoiders.
And here was Apple's CEO in the hot seat, Tim Cook, turning it around also, saying we need a revamp of corporate tax policy in this country. Here's Apple's Cook.
We recommend a dramatic simplification of the corporate tax code. This reform should be revenue neutral, eliminate all corporate tax expenditures, lower corporate income tax rates, and implement a reasonable tax on foreign earnings that allows the free flow of capital back to the United States.
Jesse Drucker in Rome, it's not just Europe that has fiscal problems these days. The United States could use revenue to balance its books as well. Is this all about, we know American companies have mountains of profits parked abroad. They would like a tax holiday to bring them home tax-free or at a lower tax rate. Is this all about leverage in that battle, Jesse? Is that what's going on here?
Well, I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, obviously that's something they've been pushing for a while, and I don't think that they've gained a lot of traction on that. I mean, actually, I want to sort of just, if I could just go back a second and flesh out something that Kara was saying a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's important not to confuse the issues here. The fact that Apple has increasing amounts of sales overseas, remember, they have sales in places like France, Germany, the UK, Italy, Japan, Australia. they're not paying taxes in those places. The fact that they are increasingly putting profits into mailboxes in Ireland, it has nothing. The fact that they have sales overseas for technical reasons makes it easier for them to do that. But it's important not to confuse the two things. In other words, they are not reporting. They have sales overseas in real places. They are not paying taxes in those places. They are not paying taxes anywhere. They are pushing their taxable income into places that have no corporate income taxes or where they're having taxes levied at rates in the single digits.
Right. I mean, that's what everybody's upset about, the sort of stateless subsidiaries, right? But isn't U.S. policy to tax on global, worldwide income?
Well, yeah. Well, so the way it works is that, I mean, it's not exactly. The way it works is that you're taxed on your non-U.S. income. I'm sorry, you're taxed on your worldwide income, but then the non-U.S. income, those taxes are effectively deferred. And so the problem these companies are facing is technically they're not permanently avoiding these taxes. They are deferring them indefinitely. And this is why they're building up this massive pile of offshore cash that they can't get their hands on without paying taxes. I mean, this is sort of a point that Carl Levin was making yesterday, where companies refer to this cash as being trapped and they can't use it. And one of them said, it's not that you can't use it. You can use it. You just need to pay taxes on it. You know, and so, you know, in some ways, the push for the repatriation tax holiday that the companies have been seeking for a number of years is a fairly bold thing to seek, because they have been aggressively pushing profits into tax havens offshore and avoiding taxes that way. And now they're essentially seeking a second tax holiday that is a necessity as a result of the situation they've created themselves, you know. And, you know, as far as kind of this all being legal, I mean, the corporate tax code and the personal income tax code in the U.S. Is a mess, you know. That said, figuring out the precise way for individual countries to tax multinational companies is a very difficult thing. No one really has a kind of clear idea how to do that. There are some proposals, you know, alternatives to the ways we do it now. But I think it's a mistake to just simply say, okay, this is the law and they're following the law, and if we don't like the results, we should change the law. I think any tax expert who cares about the public interest says that we should change the law. We certainly should change the law. It's not simply a question of following the current law. I mean, the companies are coming up with extremely complex techniques to push the law to its limits, and the Senate investigators actually, in their report yesterday, raised some questions about whether Apple's tax avoidance techniques work even under current law. Specifically, the kind of main Apple subsidiary at the top of their food chain offshore,
yeah,
that's collecting tens of billions of dollars of income, they argue that it's effectively being controlled by the U.S., and really has no management of its own over there in Ireland.
Because
and
all the board meetings were back in Cupertino.
Because all the board meetings were in California, because only one board member was from Ireland. She rarely attended the meetings. Obviously, this is a company capitalized by the parent company. And so they were making the argument that potentially all that income should be taxed in the U.S., not overseas. So I think, you know, we want to be a little careful about just sort of assuming, okay, this is a law. We may not like it, but they're following the law, and if you don't like it, you should change it. I think clearly the law should be changed, but we also should remember that these are areas of enormous disputes between the IRS and taxing authorities around the world and companies. So it's not quite as simple as kind of this is the law and the companies are following.
Yeah, absolutely. Kara, you're out in Silicon Valley country, high-tech country. Many people are saying this is a very audacious interpretation of the law. I mean, that people are saying gimmick. They're saying worse. Silicon Valley has a lot of latitude because it can assign intellectual property, and that's part of what's going on here.
Which is its value, which is the big value of all these companies.
Huge value, and you know, all power to it, but does that make them also sort of the big boundary pushers here? How do they feel about this characterization? You know, Google and Cisco and Apple and others are getting a lot of, I'm sure, unwelcome exposure here as real boundary pushers when it comes to tax law interpretation.
Well, it's not just these international laws. I mean, Amazon and other online retailers have been at war with tax authorities across states, across this country for years, about whether they should pay state and local taxes that other retailers pay. So it's a mentality of online companies to be thinking this way of how they can do this. And I think that one of the issues is that And I think this is why these congressmen became so, the senators became so slavish towards Apple in the middle of this hearing, which was sort of odd to see, was because here is some of the companies that are the most innovative and powerful and also successful compared to, you know, the U.S. industries have been losing across the world. And here's an industry that we excel in. And so it's kind of a twin problem that these politicians have. They want to call attention to these practices. Which are deny U.S. taxpayers the taxes they're owed, and the U.S. government the taxes they're owed, and at the same time attacking companies that are successful and actually are pushing boundaries and making the U.S. powerful in a certain industry at least.
Yeah, paying close attention.
So it's a real problem for the. And then of course these internet companies, not just Apple but many others, are becoming very aggressive in Washington with lobbying and paying money and. You know, basically, hiring people to influence the government in the way they never used to, because the tech industry was an industry that really didn't participate as much in politics as other industries did, and now are becoming rather aggressive with their huge amounts of money to influence these policies.
Really getting in the game. Apple may be considering a few more lobbyists on its payroll soon. Kara Swisher with All Things D out of San Francisco with us today. Kara, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
And Jesse Drucker with Bloomberg News in Rome. Jesse, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for having me.
Here was Apple CEO Tim Cook again saying, everything we've done is legal.
Apple has real operations in real places with Apple employees selling real products to real customers. We pay all the taxes we owe, every single dollar. We not only comply with the laws, but we comply with the spirit of the laws.
Well, maybe, but not everybody is so sure about that. Here's Michigan Democrat Carl Levin at the hearing yesterday.
I've never seen anything like this. We don't know of anybody that has seen anything like this, where corporations don't exist anywhere for tax purposes.
Let's dive on in here. With us right now from Pasadena, California, Edward Kleinbard, law professor at the University of Southern California's School of Law. Edward Kleinbard, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
And from Berkeley, California, Alan Auerbach is here, professor of economics and law at UC Berkeley, director of the Birch Center for Tax Policy and Public Finance at UC Berkeley. Alan Auerbach, thank you for joining us today.
Well, glad to be with you.
Edward, so here's this first assertion. You heard it there, right there by CEO Tim Cook of Apple. You know, we pay every dollar we owe on every dollar we make everywhere in the world. It's all legal. What do you say, Edward?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that the legal-illegal dichotomy really doesn't work very well for corporate taxes. Corporations file tax returns. They are continuously audited. They're in continuous negotiations with tax authorities. And they're continuously paying up in settlement of cases. So I don't want to say that a tax return is an opening bid. That's a little bit extreme. But in fact, the question of what is owed really lies on a continuum and is the result of active negotiation following the audit process.
Ed, you've said that this move that's been highlighted by congressional investigators this week by Apple represents incredible chutzpah. Why? In your view?
Well, I think what in particular represents incredible chutzpah is not their structure, which is sort of brutally simple by comparison to the elegance and complexity of a Google's double Irish Dutch sandwich. I think where the chutzpah really comes in is having successfully engineered this result, which is entirely artificial. It is entirely outside the spirit of the law. It is the result of a scrap of paper originally signed by Apple with itself in 1980, that having done that, having created in return tens and tens of billions of dollars of income taxed nowhere in the world, not in the United States, and not where its actual customers are located, to then say that in return, Apple is owed a special a tax holiday to bring the money back to fund stock buybacks and stock dividends. That, to me, is authentic chutzpah.
Alan Auerbach, you've got legislators this week talking about egregious behavior, outrageous conduct by Apple. What do you say, Alan?
Well, I'm sympathetic with their views, but they should be focusing more on how to make the tax system work better rather than trying to use rhetoric to get taxpayers to comply with a tax system that doesn't make sense.
Tom, may I respond to that?
Let me just, Alan, if I may ask you to elaborate on that for a second. We know it may be, I mean, look, it's a big mess. Everybody says it's a big mess. But within that, aren't we constantly trying to balance toward what's right and somehow, you know, pay the bills at home?
Sure. We should have a tax system that forces companies to comply with straightforward rules that obliges them to pay tax rather than giving them an ambiguous tax system that leaves open to debate what a tax liability is. The very basic problem of our tax system and the tax systems of many other countries that are having problems with multinationals is that they create a fiction that you can determine where earnings occur. That is, what the source of earnings is, what country. And, of course, in the case of Apple, they've managed to make it appear that it's nowhere. As long as countries, including the United States, try to tax companies based on where their earnings occur, as one of the reporters noted, using a methodology known as transfer pricing, it will lead to the kind of behavior that we see in the case of Apple. Now, Apple's behavior may be egregious and may be at the borderline of legal, and I'll leave it to Ed to determine that sort of thing. But if we had different rules that didn't give Apple and other companies like it an opportunity to do this sort of thing, we wouldn't be here talking about it.
Ed Kleinbart, it's a big mess, so just lay off.
Well, I agree with everything Alan just said, but I just want to offer a little additional thought, and that is that the purpose of yesterday's hearing is, it's been widely misunderstood in the press. The purpose was not to shame Apple into changing its behavior, and it was not to shame Apple into repatriating all of this money and paying tax back in the United States tomorrow. The purpose of a hearing like this was twofold. First, a platform from which to enable the permanent subcommittee staff of professional investigators, who are the best in Congress, to do their work, to develop the narrative, to develop effectively a case study, and then to present that case study really for Congress to noodle on. Because the real pressure that the PSI hearing brings to bear is not on Apple to change its behavior, but on the Senate Finance Committee to change its behavior, to get the Senate Finance Committee to light a fire under the Senate Finance Committee, the Tax Writing Committee, to actually produce new legislation that would reflect some of the principles that Alan just articulated.
Do you see that coming? I mean, that's easy to say, but when you read, everybody seems to throw up their hands when it comes to actually changing the tax code. And you say they're not there to shame them, but they, you know, I mean, they called it egregious, outrageous, gimmicks, schemes. That sounds like shaming language to me.
In fact, the results are egregious results. And I think Apple made a mistake in not acknowledging as a little bit more candidly that the results are results that seem intuitively inappropriate to the person on the street, and results that Alan and I think would agree are inappropriate under any international tax system that we could possibly construct.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about congressional charges this week of a giant tax dodge by Apple abroad, looking at American corporate tax policy and the world of offshore tax escapes in the era of the great global economy. Alan Auerbach is with us from the Birch Center for Tax Policy and Public Finance at UC Berkeley. Ed Kleinbart is here, law professor at the University of Southern California's School of Law. They both paid a lot of attention to this issue. Alan, Edward, we've got a lot of callers. I want to begin to bring them in here. I mean, interesting comments online. Boca says, corporations pay little or no taxes. Now they tell us they would pay if taxes were lowered to zero, huh? Question mark is one. But then Jim says, please focus on the tax code, which explicitly allows such tax havens. Congress allowed for this. I'll buy it with encouragement from big business. If I ask you for a tax handout and you give it to me, who's to blame? John's calling from Nashville. John, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. A couple of comments. One, I would say, who's setting up the tax law? What is their interest in how it's set up in conjunction with these big multinational corporations? Number two, very simply put, from a book called The Prince of Darkness, you can't serve your pocketbook and the people simultaneously. I mean, the argument is just outlandish about whether it's legal or not. The issue is who's setting up the legality to let things run the way they do. And as the common street American, as they say, the middle class American, they just want to see the country improve overall economically, which is really the bottom line. And all this talk is a bunch of excuses, and people are just disgusted by it.
Hey, John, let us pick it up right there. Alan, help us out here. We want strong companies. We want them to be strong in the global economy. But we've got big fiscal issues in this country. We need to pay the freight. We want that to be fair. Apple's paid billions in taxes, as Tim Cook said yesterday. But if there are more billions that, but for a very audacious interpretation of the law, might help us multiply Apple times a lot of other big companies, might help us pay down this debt and get more balanced in this country and get some of the load off, you know, individual taxpayers, how do we figure out when we've got the right balance or not, Alan?
Well, I don't think it's so much an issue of balance. We'd certainly like to tax corporations. It's just that we're relying on the caller asked who made up this tax system. This tax system is something that we inherited from the early 20th century, and it really doesn't make any sense right now. We need to have a new tax system that doesn't try to tax companies as if they're people, you know, who live in the U.S. and only operate in the U.S. These are multinational companies that operate around the globe, and as long as we try to maintain the fiction that we know where their earnings are occurring, we're going to have this problem.
So let's say, I mean, the implication here this week is that there are billions in potential revenue that would help pay off debt and for operations in the U.S. that Apple's not paying. So what's a system that would respect Apple's competitiveness, but also tap some of that, bring it home, and, you know, help pay the freight here, Alan?
Well, a system that would work would be one that taxed Apple and other multinational companies based on where their sales occur, not on where their earnings are said to occur. Apple has a big market in the United States, sells a lot of its profits here, a lot of its products here. And if we tax Apple based on where it's where it generated its earnings through sales, rather than trying to say where its earnings through production occurred, we would have a very stable tax base, and Apple wouldn't have the same opportunities for avoiding tax that it does right now.
Ed, how about it? Tax on sales, not on earnings, which you can shift around like three-card Monty. What about it, Ed?
Right. I think that what Alan is driving at is a rule in which the income would be taxed based on where the sales are,
yep,
rather than just a giant sales tax. But maybe I'm misunderstanding.
Would that help?
There's another approach, which is to remember that first and foremost, we ought to be thinking about the U.S. domestic tax on a corporate business. And there, I think we all agree that the corporate tax rate is too high, that the 35% rate is outside of world norms right now. So our first priority should be to lower the U.S. domestic rate to 25%.
But we get the impression that nobody pays that 35% rate, with the famous stories of General Electric at that scale paying, what was it, Zip a few years back.
Well, General Electric actually lost some money a few years back, but be very clear, General Electric is actually the most sophisticated master of stateless income planning probably in the United States. They have 900 tax professionals on staff at General Electric. So they are taking you know, full advantage of all the interstices of the different tax systems around the world.
But I think that's exactly. But that's what people fear, Ed. That we get into this global economy, and you've got lots of countries, you know, in red ink up to their eyeballs, and lots of companies loaded with cash running around not paying because they can work this global system.
Exactly, and so therefore, one possible outcome might be to consider a world in which U.S. firms pay tax on all of the worldwide income on a current basis at a low rate, let's call it 25%. They get a tax credit for taxes that they pay to foreign countries.
Okay.
But if we had a 25% global rate on U.S. corporations, two things. One, we've reduced the rate on domestic business. Two, we've made a very simple system. It's a little different than what Alan said, but it's a very simple system,
yep.
One that can't be gamed.
Yep.
And three, it's a competitive system, because at 25%, we're right smack dab in the middle of the sort of world norms for corporate tax rates around the world. And so a U.S. company facing a 25% tax rate on its worldwide income is not going to be disadvantaged compared to a German company in Germany or a French company in France and
yeah.
so on.
Alan, what about that as a solution? And what about the odds of it passing in Washington?
Well, I think it would probably represent an improvement over the current system, but I think it's a fool's game. I'm not implying that Ed is a fool. He certainly isn't. But I think it's a fool's game to try to continue reducing corporate taxes. It's a race to the bottom that other countries are playing and will continue to play, and it doesn't really change the basic structure of the tax system, which is illogical. If you look at what U.S. states do, they don't try to determine where earnings occur and tax them. California or Massachusetts or any other state has a formula to determine what share of U.S. profits a corporation operating in many states should pay in that state. And thinking along those lines, I think, is a more productive approach to coming up with a different way of locating income to tax it rather than simply trying to cut the rate to compete with other countries.
But, I mean, 25%, which Ed's suggesting here, is not exactly a race to the bottom. That's far from the lowest.
Well, it may sound modest, but one of the things that has kept reform from occurring in Washington
yeah.
is that the Congress has not been able to come up with a way of reducing the tax rate to 25% without also reducing corporate tax revenues, even if they get rid of some of the loopholes that they've discussed getting rid of. They don't really have an effective way of getting the tax rate down very much unless they have a actual cut in corporate tax revenues, and that is something that people in Washington have decided they don't want.
Let me bring in John from Land O'Lakes, Wisconsin. John, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, what do you think, John?
I enjoy the subject.
Great. What do you think about it?
I think that we have created a monster, and now you have to deal with it. You have different classifications of income, passive income, active income, capital gains, not capital gains, ordinary income, not ordinary income.
Yeah.
We have gifts, we have inheritances. You start going through all the classifications and all the different subtleties of every darn deduction, and you create a monster, as every company will try to plot, and individuals will try to plot and handle their affairs to get in between all those classifications.
Of course, so what's the answer? I mean, people talk about flat tax for individuals, but companies do have a lot of complexities to their operations, don't they, John?
Well, you came up with the solution right there, a flat tax, and make it flat tax for individuals and corporations. Simple. You can have your tax law one paragraph.
John, let me take it. Ed Kleinbart, how about it? Flat tax for everybody.
Well, you know, I did a paper on the Herman Cain 999 plan, for
mm-hmm.
example, and when you look at a flat tax, there is no one-paragraph tax. I can promise you that. By the time you get through with the definitions, the scope, the exceptions, no matter what anybody says, there is no such thing as a one-paragraph tax, and it will never be a return that fits on a postcard. The trouble with flat taxes, as a lot of people use them, is that the term doesn't mean very much. Is it a flat income tax, or is it a flat sort of a sales tax? Those have different revenue and distributional consequences. And the problem is not whether the biggest problems that we face are not the rate structure. It's not, you know, that we have a different marginal rates.
Okay.
That's not the administrative problem. The administrative problem that we're facing right here is that, as Alan has emphasized, is that we don't have a modern system for taxing business income, both domestically as well as internationally. And that's what we need. We need a more modern system for taxing business income.
And something that gets toward fairness, whatever that means. Melissa in Franklin, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Melissa. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. My real concern is everyone is missing the boat talking about working towards fairness. We have a political and economic culture that is not actually committed to fairness. It is committed to avoiding taxes, avoiding expenses, and increasing the money kept. Everywhere you go, banks, advertisements, they will come right out and say how to keep more of your money.
But isn't that just natural? I mean, doesn't every single person on the planet look at taxes that way, at one level?
Of course, but to get arguments like a company as innovative and brilliantly orchestrated as Apple to say, well, if the codes weren't so complicated, we could figure it out and pay that. I mean, that's absurd, first of all. Who would accept that argument that Apple can't figure it out, or a company like Apple?
Oh, I think they figured it out pretty well.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
But I think the bottom line is we have this culture where companies are simply not expected to act like everybody else unless it's in their favor. So I would never get away with behavior like that. Many people I know who had hard times with the recession, lost businesses, lost jobs, they're not getting any clemency on their taxes.
Well, I mean, I take your point, Melissa, and no doubt you probably don't have an Irish subsidiary, but here's another listener. Cindy says, you know, look, if it's legal, why is it wrong? If you're talking about morality, then how about we go through your tax return, she writes, and we can all cast judgment on your deduction. I mean, lots of people taking deductions. How do we get to tax justice overall here in a global economic era? Blake in Augusta, Georgia. Blake, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I think the egregious thing here is that we're focusing on demonizing a productive company that employs, you know, tens of thousands of Americans and tens of thousands of people abroad. I think, honestly, the United States should take a book out of the Irish playbook, which apparently we gave it to them, and lower our tax rate.
What, so lay off? Because they're a job creator. Ed, how about it?
Well, there aren't a lot of questions to which there are black and white answers, but this is one. This isn't about Apple bashing, and it's not about failing to recognize the importance and creativity of Apple and all the great jobs it's created. It's simply that we have a system that imposes income taxes on individuals and on corporations. And the question is a twofold one. One is Apple paying what it owes under current law? And there I've tried to suggest that answer is always fuzzier than people appreciate.
Yep.
When it comes to big companies.
Yep.
And second, what is the right policy? I agree with the earlier caller that this isn't a morality play, right? I don't think that we should expect to appeal to Apple's conscience. There is no natural law of how much tax Apple ought to pay. But what we need to think about is if we are going to have a corporate tax, who should pay it and at what rate? And what the Apple experience demonstrates is that what we think our current tax law to be, what we think our policy to be, is not what our practice actually is. It's this huge disconnect between the law as it's generally understood or as Congress understands it, and the actual practice by multinational firms. That was the purpose of the hearing, to say, look at the gap between what we think we do, what we think we tax, and what is actually being taxed.
Ed, what do you think is going on? Usually when there's a hearing like this, it's somebody's crowbar. Somebody's trying to leverage some change.
Yes.
So what's the backstory on this hearing and the spotlight on Apple this week? What's being pushed here?
I believe that Chairman Levin approaches a hearing like this as an opportunity to do the investigative work, to develop a case study, and then hold that case study up to the American people, primarily to Congress itself, to his fellow senators, and say, this is the practice of tax law as it exists today, not the abstractions that you all may think is what the tax law operates. The practice is so far removed from what we as legislators might write if we were to start from a clean sheet of paper. I, Carl Levin, am putting pressure on you, my fellow senators, my fellow members of Congress, to do better in revising the law, because there's this gigantic gap between practice and intended policy.
Well, we will be watching to see if we get any revision as this kind of tax play goes on, and there's plenty of it. Edward Kleinbard at USC, the School of Law, joining us from Pasadena, California. Ed, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
And Alan Auerbach at UC Berkeley. Thank you very much, Alan, for your insights.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.